This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
This is Everything Elite, the world's best podcast devoted exclusively to All Elite Wrestling and the Elite Extended Universe. This is AB, and that wasn't a glitch. I just wanted to repeat myself. I'm joined here by, I'm going to go with Nate, aka Epitasis. What's up, Nate?
What's up? It's me, Epitasis. I think it's gone to me a few times in a row here. We'll have to throw it to the Discord to get the actual stats on that.
I'm so mad at that.
That's all right. I don't mind. I'll step up to the plate and I will respond to your introduction first. Here I am. We're in the deep thaw now. We've been pretty much iced over for like 2 weeks, but everything's finally melting. How are things going in your neck of the woods?
Well, it's warmed up a little bit. Mike and I talked about this a little in light this morning. I took the dogs on a walk in just a long sleeve t-shirt. Very nice. Really delightful.
I did. There was a tweet that was like, I pity Los Angeles people that will never know the joy of it being 40 degrees and it feeling like it's 70 degrees because it's been 20 degrees for 3 weeks.
Yeah, it felt so good today. So that was nice. I don't know whether I would give that up for it to just be warm all the time. Probably, because I hate the cold.
You know, I hate the cold. I made the decision to go to school in Miami primarily because I hated the cold. At some point, I got the idiot idea in my mind that I missed seasons and I came back into the cold rather than coming out of the cold. I came back into the cold. And now I'm just like, oh, that was a mistake. I regret that. I should have stayed in the tropical climate.
Yes, that would have been the appropriate move, frankly, but... You know, we make choices, and then we have to live with their consequences. So here we are. We're also joined by Mike Spears. What consequences are you living with today, Mike?
Oh, I mean, the everyday pleasures of life, man. I mean, just like my just daily existential crises, waking up going, oh, this again, you know, and just, you know, I just try and keeping on, you know, hey, y'all, it's your old pal, Mike Spears. Make sure I want to say that out of the way.
Got to get the catchphrase in there.
I get called out when I don't do the catchphrase. I do.
You did tell me at one point that it was not a catchphrase you were trying to get over. That did happen. I was like, Mike, why are you lying to me?
I mean, it kind of happened. But, you know, it's something that, like, it is pleasant now in the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains. So, but I'm totally with you, Nate. Like, I lived for a good while in North Carolina, and that was about as north as I could handle, you know? Like, I have my own internal beacon of where I can go, like, no, not enough sunlight and cold's going to make me have sad brain all the time. So, I could handle just about... I can probably live in... what's the town they always bill up Adam Page from that's on the North Carolina-Virginia border? Boone's Creek
Aaron,
or something?
Aaron's Crossing. Boone's Crossing.
Aaron's Creek. Oh, we got there. I could probably live there because that's right on the North Carolina-Virginia border, but I can't do much more of that. I'm a big old wuss. So, yeah, like the tropical climes, though, I have to say I do not miss having basically 10 months of 90-degree weather with 90% humidity.
Yeah, I think I do miss it. I think I just do.
You think that now?
Well, miss it. I've never had it, so.
Aaron, you would thrive in Miami. You would thrive.
Let's be honest.
Wait, hold on. Let's break this down. Why would I not thrive in Miami?
Okay, I will. I will break this down. Let's be honest. The three of us will not thrive anywhere. We will get by. We will do fine.
Tolerate.
We will tolerate our circumstances. There is no climate that is going to magically make any one of us thrive.
Okay, I take back my previous annoyance at your reaction. You're frankly right. I can't say anything else about it.
I mean, like, we hear about this majestical place called San Diego that's like 70 degrees all the time. But then, like, I think about it. I'm like, you know what? No, I'd be miserable because I'd find something small, like, in perceived slight would drive me insane. Right? Like, we are a bunch that, like, nothing, like, we live in a world and a society that nothing is ever good enough and something will eventually, like, make us miserable, right? Like that's just the human condition.
I mean, the real answer is you just have to be, you know, obscenely wealthy enough where you can pick your climate at the time of the year and jump from one to the other one. That's the real solution. Just go, oh, I'm going to spend this summer or I'm going to spend this winter in San Diego and then come back to wherever.
That's why I'm getting into Top Shot. You know, I'm gonna make my millions through Top Shot. You know, become an eccentric. I feel like I'd be a great eccentric millionaire. You know, I have the energy for it.
Yeah, I'm also on the Top Shot retirement plan. Didn't go great today, but I'm crossing my fingers for tomorrow.
I missed out on GameStop. I missed out on Bitcoin, I guess, and I'm missing out on Top Shot now. I've just missed out on everything.
Hey, there's always tomorrow for Top Shot.
Yeah, I don't know. I've given in. I'm just gonna have to work for the rest of my life.
Mm.
Yeah, sounds awful, doesn't it? All right. Well, if you want to hear more of our musings about climates and our relative thriving, you can follow us on Twitter at @EverythingAEW. I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Nate's at Epitasis. Mike's at Fuji. Hey ya! Subscribe to the podcast, please. If you subscribe using the Apple Podcast app, give us a 5-star rating and a review. Tell a friend about the show. And if you want to support the show, the best possible way to do so is to head over to patreon.com/everythingelite and subscribe. Some late month subscribers trickling in this month. So welcome, friends. We're happy to have you join, including I know we've had at least one new in the past few days, one new Green Team member. So they could be listening live right now as we record. So welcome. We didn't discuss this before the show, but when are we going to talk about the motherfucking Big Show, Paul White? I mean, when is that coming up in this
episode? Mean the Big Nasty?
The Big Nasty, yes.
I'm fine. You know what? I'll say that I'm fine to do it right now.
All right, let's do it. Let's talk Big Show first.
It rules.
Well, I guess we should say AEW has announced that they've signed FKA the Big Show, Paul White, to a long-term deal. He will be announcing, commentating on a new YouTube show called AEW Dark Elevation. Very unclear how it's different from AEW Dark, but supposedly we'll find out. They announced Tony Schiavone will be joining him. But as Tony Khan has made very clear, Paul White also has a wrestling license and will be wrestling in AEW. So reactions.
Yeah, I became more excited about this than I really ever would have expected that I would be. You know, I probably had not thought about the Big Show since, I don't know, WrestleMania 30 was probably the last time that the Big Show had any sort of real estate in my mind. But as we saw, I think a lot of the reactions online today to the Big Show signing, a lot of the, you know, meltdowns about the Big Show signing, and just really came to grasp the full picture of what it means that the Big Show is like, no, I don't need Vince to be my, you know, forever daddy and have my little Legends retirement plan with him. I can leave because Vince didn't make me, and I can go sign with Tony and go to the spiritual successor to WCW and have fun there and, you know, do stuff with Tony Schiavone. So I'm pretty interested to see what that looks like. I expect that he will be booked better than he ever has been in his career. You know, I'm not like especially enthused to see him wrestle, but it'll be fun to see, you know, a little Big Show and Brian Cage stare down or Big Show and Luchasaurus showdown or whatever it is. So yeah, I kind of came around to it, and chalked it up as a sizable AEWW.
It's something where this came in waves, right? Like, I feel like everyone's reaction first, it was like, what the hell? Because we literally, Aaron, I just posted the episode of AEW Lite on Patreon right as the PR message came into my email box. I immediately tried to copy and paste it on Twitter to try to beat people, but instead I beat people talking about the Stairs match rematch and the Go Big Show vibes. But and then I kind of sat down, and other than the holy crap, this is kind of wild, this is happening, the more I started thinking about this, the more that in we have seen, at least through other legends that have come through, with the section of one that we will probably talk about later on, who finally like did something really rad tonight, they've been smart about how they've handled these older wrestling figures, especially wrestling figures who are up there and their heyday was more than 20 years ago. But I'm really enthused for several reasons. I was actually in a pretty in-depth conversation with my brother, friend of the show, Drew, about how this is the guy that should have been a star of epic proportions, no height joke there intended, for Vince McMahon for like the last 20 years. Because the one thing that both Vince and his dad were good at was understanding how to use Andre the Giant. And the idea about Andre the Giant is you don't have him stick in one place. You have him beat up a bunch of people. Then you send him around. He's an attraction. And you go send him to Hollywood. That could have very easily have happened with Paul White. But that did not happen here. And it's something that's like coming in. And it makes me a little bit sad that like this is going to be his retirement gig. Because it's something that like you watch. And you're like, this is a guy who like really should be like someone that like when someone beat him at the tail end of his tenure in WWE, it should have been a big thing in giving someone rub, but ultimately he was booked to hell and there were a lot of other things that kind of discouraged that. But I think that everyone will be pleasantly pleased, at least with him as a figure, because he's a funny guy. Like he's a charismatic, funny guy. He seems to be a pretty decent dude. He's someone that, you know, he was at one point like really hooked up to like the Happy Madison people, and like he was looked like that could have been like that, but then WWE kind of get him down there, so they could be pleasant. I will say that two things, closing out my thoughts on this, other than haha, this probably made Vince McMahon really angry, which is funny, but I don't know how much rub one can get off someone who's been utterly destroyed for the last 20 years in booking in WWE, and someone who, you know, he is someone that is a larger guy and had like major health issues that they had to fix for his life. Like he had to get the pituitary gland fixed up there. But I don't know how much cachet you're really going to get off people beating him now. But on the other hand, I want to announce something. The Ward Throw now has a Masters Seniors division. And guess who's going to be our first entrant in this? It's going to be the big nasty Paul White. And I'm excited to see how far he could possibly throw Marco Stunt across the stage. So those are my long winded rant about that. Sorry.
I hate to make it a trifecta, but I too am pleased with the Paul White signing in AEW. And it's not because, as everyone else says, I'm not like, oh, fuck, I can't wait to see, you know, the Big Show wrestling again and that shitty jumper that he wears or whatever. But
oh, wow.
I know. But I was I think about it from this perspective. I think there's two reasons that it's really important that they signed Paul White. One, it's really important to AEW as like an alternative or like a competitor to WWE, because it signals to Turner, to other business partners, that this is like a real thing. It's another example of someone who is willing to, you know, he could have made whatever money he wanted, I'm sure, in WWE, but he's willing to risk that, which indicates that it's not a risk to come over to AEW. So I think that's important from a business perspective, but I also think it's important from a talent perspective. This signals to other wrestlers who either are in WWE and want to get out, or are up and coming wrestlers trying to figure out where they should go, that AEW is a stable place. If these guys, if Paul White, if Sting, even if you think about, you know, Arn Anderson jumping over or Jerry Lynn or those kind of people, you know, it's like, okay, this is a real thing. It's going to be around for many years. And so I think it's important that they can hook a guy in like that who did feel like a WWE lifer, who, yes, started in WCW, but had been in the Fed for 20 plus years. I think it's an important signal to all of those stakeholders in wrestling.
Yeah. You know, he's kind of an interesting guy to play what if with. because he, you know, very well could have been an Andre the Giant figure for 30 plus years for the WWE, but it's also kind of hard to do because they fucking botched it like his second week in the company or whatever. So it's like that die has long been cast, but he also does have value because he's probably had his hands tied a little bit in terms of other media opportunities, which we've seen that AEW just doesn't do. The guy loves Destiny. So he's going to have a Twitch channel and he's going to have eyeballs on there to, you know, be like, oh yeah, I'm the Big Show. I'm very famous wrestling legend. I work for AEW and here's me being personable on my channel or whatever. And, you know, he had a Netflix series. He's been in movies. He's, I think, in the top tier of actors as far as in the wrestling business and being able to, you know, have a respectable range in any kind of role. So, you know, you can see him going out for more roles and catching on places and being like, oh yeah, the Big Show showed up as a little bit part in whatever Netflix movie I'm watching. What's he doing now? Oh, he's in AEW. So yeah, very, very few drawbacks here, I think.
All right, well, those are our Paul White takes. Like I said, he's going to be on Elevation starting on March 15th. I'm sure we'll be talking about that over at the Everything Elite Patreon in some way or another. I think Ogan volunteered to do some Patreon coverage of Elevation. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. Okay, Elite or Delete time. Nate, what was your favorite thing from the show this week?
Pretty clear choice for me this week. Pretty thankful once again to be in the number one spot because I can pick the easy one and then leave you guys to flounder. The Sting, Darby Allin, Team Taz segment on this show was, I think, far and away the best thing, the most exciting thing, the only thing that really like lit a fire in me. I was like, yeah, pro fucking wrestling is happening. This shit is awesome. Was just, you know, I had very low expectations. Talk about expectations a lot on this show. So that might have contributed to it. But, you know, Team Taz has an overlong wrestling match. And we're promised that Sting is going to make his presence known as he does week after week. They have a improbably tonally perfect video where Sting drives out into the desert, finds Darby Allin in his body bag, and Darby Allin sits up smiling with his belt. And it's got like this jaunty waltz behind it playing. It's totally different than anything else you'd see in pro wrestling, but just played perfectly for me for whatever reason. And it was very short and to the point. It's like, hey, here's what's happening. We're catching you up. And Sting comes out with Hook in the body bag, which was a big pop for me. I was all ready for that to be like, oh, well, we just saw him get Darby out of the body bag. So is this going to be a Darby again? Because that's kind of lame. No, it wasn't. It was fucking Hook. And then, of course, the massive cherry on top, Darby Allin coming down from a zip line, looked great, had velocity with the skateboard, zooming from the rafters all the way into the ring. This was like, this really, I think, sold me on, oh, this is going to work. They're going to make Darby Allin the next Sting, and he's going to be a big superstar for it. And, like, it's not just, like, Sting giving him his little endorsement. It's like, no, like, Darby Allin is inheriting that whole shit. And this was very fucking exciting to me.
Yeah, I was hooting and hollering, which is better than standing and pacing, because I actually verbally exclaimed when they had Hook come out of the body bag and then Darby slide down. And like that, this was the person that I was alluding to about how they handle their legends. And this made it somewhat worthwhile the last few weeks. You know, all the shouting at each other and, you know, people of Team Taz being afraid of the snow and just like the general just like apathy that feud had. And it instantly just kicked it up in like the right kind of way. And it just was something also awesome to see Sting, almost 60 years old, someone who suffered spinal stenosis because of that turnbuckle bomb. And spinal stenosis is something that, at least at the time, everyone was like, oh, you can't do anything now. You have spinal stenosis. But he looked great here. Darby, like, came off like a star, as Nate alluded to. And it was, like, a nice way to kind of tie everyone together and to have, like, the added stakes. And now I'm excited for next week when Taz is just going to cut a blistering promo about hurting his baby boy Hook. And, you know, I think that it provided the right fuel to the fire at a point that this feud really kind of needed it. And now I'm really stoked for this match on the pay-per-view. I think that it's something that now that we've seen Sting do some sort of aggression and physicality, and other than like taking the powerbomb, now we know it's like, oh, Sting is good. Like, we shouldn't like watch this going like, oh, because you know sometimes you watch like match of older wrestlers and you're like, no, you shouldn't be doing this. Like, you like then it takes you out of it because you start getting concerned. Your overriding thought isn't the match, it's about their well-being. I don't have that anymore, Sting. So I think that this is awesome. And, you know, it was just a, this was a win across the board. And yeah, Nate, you had the easy pick because this was the best thing on the show by far.
Yeah. I mean, what else can I say? It was great. Very good. I was excited. I think I smashed exclamation points at the Discord as it was happening. So it was good.
I did also like Taz, you know, giving some breadcrumbs, setting the scene a little. It's like, oh, you know, Hook's out waiting in the parking lot for us to go party or just to go get some drinks after the show or whatever. And just added, yeah, you know, yeah, we hang out in the parking lot a lot because we're not really welcome in the locker room. It's like, oh, great. You set the stage perfectly. Now we know why Hook's not here. Now we know why you have done 15 fucking promos from the parking lot. Just a little bit of justification goes a long way.
All right. Little Nasty. Mike, what's your elite pick for the week?
That, I don't think that's going to stick, man.
I try something basically every week.
Yeah, it seemed to be the one that was the least offensive, I guess.
Right,
of the ones you've tried.
Yeah. I mean, you're still chasing a slider outside there, but at least this time you had a good cut at it. But, you know, it's something that I've been talking about a lot recently, but Rey Fénix is the wrestler of the year in 2021. And we now already have his title match he had against Kenny Omega, which was incredible. And then we had this really fun match with Lance Archer where they just went after it. And, you know, this match, not only is Rey Fénix being awesome, but again, another guy that like he was having like health issues and had to have like the back surgery and everything, and Lance Archer just being game for everything. I mean, the fact that they did a standing avalanche Spanish fly, and it's just like that should not be happening. That makes no sense, like cognitive sense to me. And this match, like, it was something where Fénix has the ability, and there's not very many wrestlers that do this to me anymore, to like make me get invested and want to see this guy win because he's just such an outstanding performer. And each time that he like comes up short, and it makes me want so badly for him to have like the big singles win. And it's something that like this match was stiff. It was brutal. Like both guys had welts on them coming out of this thing. Like Lance Archer, I don't know what happened, but he had a welt on his rib cage immediately. So it was a great main event on a show that I feel like the wrestling, like we had two squash matches on this tape show, and it needed something like this really to kind of tie the show together. And, you know, having a completely insane main event, you know, left me with a smile on my face and makes me sad that Rey Fénix is not going to get his big shot when he's the best wrestler in the world in 2021 and he deserves it.
Yeah, it was kind of my, I mean, Rey Fénix is great. He's probably been my elite for like two or three of the last 4 weeks or something. I don't know. This match just could not hook me and did not hook me. Because I did come on the show and was like, yeah, you know, I don't really watch wrestling just because I'm rooting for my favorites to win. Maybe that's just not true for Rey Fénix. it might especially apply because he does go out and fucking kill himself in these matches to make him work. He did that here, you know, taking all these wild bumps and, you know, diving at high speed and doing all of this. I was very early on in the match, I'm like, oh, there's no way Rey Fénix is winning this. Lance Archer is winning this for sure. And it took me out of the match, and I was just kind of, oh, okay, I know what happens here. They just don't have Rey Fénix at that level. And if they're not going to put him at that level, then I'm not going to get invested in this.
As some people, before the match started, I was like, I wonder who's going to win this match. Like, it felt like two guys, it's like you really don't want either of them to lose. At least I didn't want either of them to lose.
Well, they just beat Ray Phoenix in that six man. Like, they beat Ray Phoenix.
That's like, true.
Like
they
a drum.
Gallows pin him in that. That's true.
Yeah, they beat him like a drum. And I'm like, no, he's going to lose for sure.
That's true, I guess. Although when I said that in the Discord, everybody was like, oh, Phoenix is winning. You know, like, why would you have a ladder match without Phoenix? Which I think is true.
Yeah, I mean, you do also want big guys to catch and shit.
Right. But now what do you do with Phoenix in the pay-per-view?
Probably nothing. Or put him in the... I guess he's not in the additional tag team battle royal because his partner's in the... I don't know. Maybe you could tag with Pac. That'd be okay. But
I guess. Yeah. I mean, that'd be a good tag team. But
it is,
yeah.
I can't get too mad about him not winning this match because he wasn't going to win the ladder match either. So go on, Eric.
Oh, I mean, yeah. You nailed it. Phoenix is good. Phoenix booking is bad. I agree. My Elite pick of the week, folks, it's Papa Buck. I just don't see how I could pick anything else. Even if I'd gone first, I think I would have picked Papa Buck. The man bled for his art, first of all. And if that wasn't good enough, so, you know, the thing was Jericho and MJF had taken him out backstage. He's got blood all over his face. And if that wasn't good enough, they throw him into the truck with the picture of the Bucks on the back. And he just perfectly smears blood down both of their faces. Oh, and then the Raw posted this in the Discord, but the look on his face when they load him into the ambulance. Just a great performance from Papa Buck, outshining Chris Jericho again. He's just excellent.
Yeah. Love Papa Buck. Love his songs. Love his shirts. He's everything that Chris Jericho wishes he could be.
Yeah, and it all makes sense because he's truly blessed and highly favored. So, I mean, it's all working out for Papa Buck.
It's just so funny, like, the way that, like, he crumpled. Because it wasn't just, like, that he was thrown into it and he bounced off it. He got thrown into both the doors, and he made sure to, like, make as much contact as possible and then slide down the back of the truck and just leaving what looked like it was fake blood. Like, I don't think Papa Buck gigged for this.
Yeah, no, it was for sure fake blood.
It might have been watered down ketchup.
It looked exactly like the fake blade jobs that Matt Jackson was doing on BTE for a while, where the whole point was how terrible they looked because it kept blading to get out of things. But that kind of just made it funnier to me and made me enjoy it more.
No, it was definitely real, just for the record.
I mean, it's real to you, damn it. But yeah, it's so funny. Like, the face that he made was like a, I'm going to try to make this on camera. I'm probably going to get this really wrong, but I'm just doing this to pop Aaron and Nate. It was like.
you need your eyes to roll back in your head more, but not really. Like, you're trying to, but it's not really working. Yeah.
it was tremendous.
Would love to see Mike Gig on the podcast recording just to pop us. That'd be funny.
I mean, just like, I have enough forehead, I could really start dusting it up, you know. I think that'd be a great look for me. Just going, I mean, as I'm slowly going insane, right? Like, we all acknowledge I'm slightly going crazy by the week. Like, the next step is me just gigging on air.
Yeah, I think that'd be good for you.
I know Murder Brian wants to gig on a stage show.
Let's make it a Patreon reward here, guys. Come on, don't give away the goods.
Get
us to a hundo, and then I'll drive up to Kentucky so Aaron can cash in his punch in my neck for talking about the Hall of Fame, and then I immediately gig off that. That's it.
Yeah, that'd be good, I think. You know, Nate, you talked about Paul White, this big good actor, could get some more roles. I'm talking Papa Buck. I want to see Papa Buck on Netflix, baby.
I mean, that's all well and good, but that's not his true passion. His true passion, obviously, is music. Maybe on the on the Sound Exploder show, he could be on there, and they could break down Warrior's Cry or one of his other great tunes. I just don't think acting is his passion.
That's fair. Our listener elite, Thoros, all the non-wrestling segments. I think he nails it here because usually we come on here and complain that the non-wrestling segments were bad, but the wrestling is good. But it was kind of inverted a little bit this week. All right, let's talk about the bad stuff on the show. There wasn't much. Nate, you got something deeper? I've listed one thing on the notes. You got something?
Yeah, I got something. I haven't looked at the notes, so maybe this is the one thing that you do have there. But I'm just gonna be brave enough to say it. There's too much wrestling on this show. I want less wrestling.
Wow,
I'm tired of wrestling. The matches are too long. I want less wrestling. I want more hijinks and spectacles.
More
and I don't
vlogs.
Know, more vlogs would be great. I don't know who I have to talk to get all this professional wrestling off my professional wrestling program because there's too much of it. I think it's that number one, my attention span is just not good enough. You know, I'm on Twitter during the show because we got a Twitter account for the show. So I'm looking at that. The matches are going on. Every match is, you know, too competitive. Every match is, you know, charitably 2 minutes too long. More accurately, probably like 7 minutes too long. And, you know, it's a lot of people that we see week in and week out when there are other people that I find interesting that we don't see very often at all. And just, you know, cut some fucking fluff from the matches and give me one or two other segments with one or two other people to see if they can, you know, catch hold of something and do something interesting with the time. Because I'm tired of the pro wrestling.
And to be honest, the wrestling on this show, even though it seems like I like the main event more than y'all did, you started off with a Jon Moxley versus Ryan Nemeth match that should have been kick paradigm shift and we're out of here. And then we had Varsity Blondes versus Cage and Starks, where Varsity Blondes got an incredible amount of offense, and that kind of went on, you know, that went in through a break. Brandon Cutler and Jake Hager, they could have just like had this been a beat down in the back, and then we see Papa Buck go flying into the merch truck. Like, we didn't need that as a match there, to be quite honest. Hangman Page versus Isaiah Cassie, I liked it, but you know, it was a little long, and I know that some people thought that this match, like Isaiah Cassidy, was way too much on offense, and they think that Adam Page should be a bigger star. Britt Baker versus Nyla Rose, I felt like actually was like the length that match should be, and same with the main event. But I just listed reasons why those first four matches could have been something different. So I do see your point here, Nate, even though if you had it your way, it would just be 120 minutes of goofs, bits, and, you know, vlogs.
Yeah, travelogs. Yeah, but I mean, you cut that. Even if you just trimmed the squashes, even if you just trimmed the Hager match and the Moxley match, and I guess the Varsity Blondes match, I guess they're just a competitive tag team in this promotion. But you could trim. I mean, I've said this on the show 40 times probably. Just trim them a little, and then you can fit an entire another match in there. And you know what comes with an entire another match is entrances, ring announcements. You know, hand raising at the end, all that stuff, the stuff that isn't wrestling, I would like to see more. So I'm being accused of pivoting to the Russo brand in the chat here. It's not a pivot. This has always been the position that I've held on this show. That's why I recap the vlogs, because there's no wrestling on them.
Well, they're going to be real mad because I'm going to be castrating the marks here in a few minutes. So Mike, buddy, what was your least favorite thing on this show?
I mean, I kind of alluded to it, but having like two squash matches and the way that they've kind of like set things up, because this was a taped show, but like you constantly came back to breaks showing what just happened on TV, which that's fine to do it like once or twice, but I felt like they were doing that like every break after a match. They were doing like, this just happened, and we're like, okay, that's taped. And it's just like the thing with the taped shows, it's not that they're bad. In a lot of ways, the tape shows like let them kind of like trim out what's not needed and, you know, make sure that everyone knows that is an exploding barbed wire match, not exploding bat barbed wire match. Like they make sure you're able to get over that point of it. But it's just something where like the vibe of the show, especially with how it was taped and the crowd mix, is always something that you can't hear, like the ring, like moves in the ring. You can't hear commentary sometimes. It just was like, it did not, like, when I take this as a whole, did not really feel as much like 2 hours of primetime Major League Wrestling in a way. So
if I can point to one possible culprit, the sound mixing is always pretty rough in this promotion.
Oh, it's always bad on TV.
Yeah, on the pre-tape shows, the crowd is always way too high in the mix, but was exacerbated on this show especially because JR just had no energy whatsoever. JR was falling asleep. Don't know. Excalibur was doing his usual the valiant effort, but JR just felt like he didn't have anything left on this.
And was I the only one who noticed that there was a lot of ADR with Excalibur on the show? Like, it's very clear when like they do and they interject things on commentary, and there's a lot of that from both him and Tony Schiavone on this.
Yeah, I mean, I hear that on all the pre-tape shows. There's usually at least one or two of those that jump out at me. But yeah, that was all over the show too.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I just tune out. I think I'm just kind of the point where I don't hear the commentary very much. So I just miss out on all that.
And I admit, like, I'm a production-minded person, so I pick up on things that are going to bug me more so than others. But this felt like a very kind of sloppy TV show.
The mix always irritates the hell out of me. I mean, it's just like, as you said, especially on these tape shows, it's just too loud. It's insane. Especially when, you know, Griff Garrison's, or it might have been Brian Pillman, one of them's getting back in the ring and the camera pans around and it's like, okay, there's nobody here. We all know there's nobody here. I understand you want to sweeten the noise. Like, I appreciate that. That's fine. Probably makes it a little less weird. But yeah, they definitely overdo it. All right, my delete pick. I mean, I'm cheating here, but what I want to delete is the content strategy around this women's tournament. All right,
let's go, let's go.
That's what I'm deleting. I'm tired. I'm castrating the marks here. I'm tired of this nonsense. That like, actually, this is a brilliant business decision made by one Tony Khan. Just, you know, hitting all the right buttons. Because nothing that Tony Khan has said publicly or has been laundered for Tony Khan actually makes sense, actually is logical. Okay, let's talk about it. The first point. Okay, they got this thrown on them, I don't know. But they've decided they really want to make this Bleacher Report thing happen, which, by the way, we've never heard about before. They really want to make this BleacherReport.com thing happen. And they think Riho versus Thunder Rosa is a drawing match. So they think people are going to come to watch that match. How many times have we talked about that AEW's main money is on TV? If they have a drawing match, they need to put it on TV to draw a number. Also, if they thought these two women could draw people, they would put them on TV more. So no, I don't buy that. Plus, Tony Khan had an interview with Mike Johnson from PW Insider this week, and he said they wanted to get more people watching Dark. So what did they do? They put Jon Moxley, Pac, and Orange Cassidy on Dark in consecutive weeks. And did that work? Yes, it did, because those are the people they've built up as big stars on their TV. Riho hasn't been on TV for 11 months until last week. Thunder Rosa is very rarely on TV. The idea that they're like, actually, we've got these very, you know, they popped this one quarter hour, so suddenly these are big stars. Tony Khan believes you are stupid enough to believe that. He thinks you're dumb enough to buy into that. All right. The second point that they're making, Nate, I'm going to let you tell me why you think I'm wrong on all these, but let me hit my.
You know, I agree with you. So I don't know why you assume I'm going to do this.
I just want to get my shit in. Okay. So the second one is that they want to condition the fans to watch on Sunday. And again, in this PW Insider interview, Tony Khan said they want to condition their hardcore fans to watch on Sunday on this Bleacher Report thing. Okay, well, first of all, your hardcore fans are already watching. You don't have to condition your hardcore fans to do anything.
It's the exact same number of buyers that you've had on every other pay-per-view are going to be on this one.
Exactly. But if you think your hardcore fans are really into seeing Riho versus Thunder Rosa, put it on TV where your money is. Do that. And it also, so it doesn't explain why they wouldn't reward them by putting them on TV more. But if you're trying to condition people to do something, why are you conditioning them to go to bleacherreport.com when the next Sunday you want them to go to the BR Live app? It's just going to add more confusion. These two things are not going to be in the same place. And then you're putting this whole tournament on 100 different nights. Cubs fan had the big tweet that went around about there's for like five different nights they were going to have shows on. Most people don't want to skip around. And most people don't want to watch wrestling five nights a week, by the way. And they don't want to have to find all these different ways to see it. So the big thing was some people view this as a demotion, but it's not. Of course it's a fucking demotion. Are you kidding me? Where were the men's title eliminator matches? Where were they? But how about this? Where are the qualifying matches for this stupid fucking ladder match? They're all on Dynamite. All those matches are on Dynamite. Only the women's matches are sent over to these other platforms. So I understand the point that if this was thrust upon them at the last minute, this is the best match they had in the can. Oatgan made that point to me earlier. I think that's true. But they put themselves in this position, and they decided which matches put on there. They could have thrown John Moxley over there if they really wanted to pop a number. That's not what they want to do. They have to do these matches because they've already put themselves in this position. And so they've decided, nobody will care if we throw this match on Sunday. It's bullshit. If you believe it, you're a mark. Thank you.
Yeah. I don't know why you would assume that I would disagree with you just for the sake of doing it. The idea that it's not a demotion going from a million guaranteed viewers to whatever you can manage to draw on your own on BleacherReport.com, where no one has ever expected to see pro wrestling in their life, and that's not a demotion somehow, is ludicrous. I would say if you do intend to launder this explanation for why you are siloing off the Women's Eliminator tournament matches, I would suggest you don't launder it through people who are outspoken about not liking the people in the tournament. You're not going to get the favorable reaction that you want from there. So,
yeah, and just a couple things that I greatly co-sign with what y'all are saying, but here's another aspect about this that some of this I've said before in private, but some of this is off the top of the dome. Why do they think that people are going to have such a big issue with, it's a pay-per-view on a Sunday? Do they think that people are just now getting into wrestling? Like, it was new that AEW was doing their big shows on a Saturday, and that was great. And, like, that was the thing. But that was not the change. Like, the change is not them going to Sunday. The change was already happening when they went from Sundays, which has been traditionally the pay-per-view day outside of, like, major holidays when, like, Starrcade would be on Thanksgiving. Like, it would always be that way. So, like, saying, like, you're conditioning your fans, like, if that's the case, you're trying to conditioning your fans, then each time they do one of these hype segments right before the main event, they should be saying, hey, and remember, we are moving to Sunday for this pay-per-view. That's how you remind people, because those are your viewers that are going to be buying the pay-per-view. And number two, the idea that you're going to retain, like, all your viewership and that your hardcores are going to go with that, like, that is true, that AEW has been very fortunate in that the viewership, for the most part, is able to be flexible across days of the week. Like, we saw that with the NBA playoffs and with the Major League Baseball playoffs, that they were able to do the Saturday Dynamite, right? Like, that was not an issue. Like, the viewership was mostly stable there. It's a completely different thing when you're going to platforms and when you really have not told people, like, is this going to be just a streaming video that's going to be on BleacherReport.com? Is this going to be something that's going to be on BleacherReport.com's YouTube page? Is this going to be like on their Instagram? We don't know that. And you can't expect, like, you're trying to condition your fans to this. You're not providing the things to condition your fans towards that. And are you thinking that this is going to reach out to a bigger audience? Like, yes, it's the internet. But when is the last time that BleacherReport.com has been truly relevant as anything other than just a slide deck property that WarnerMedia has tried to offload since they purchased it? It hasn't been. And then lastly, wouldn't you want to protect your one woman's draw? Like, Riho, before she even came back, she was a consistent draw. It wasn't a huge draw, but she was someone that always picked up viewers and was something like this. Wouldn't you want to, like, have that on your property that you derive the vast majority of your revenue through your rights fees? Wouldn't you want to have it on there? Like, I get wanting to appease Time Warner and Time Warner wanting to fix this and be like, hey, go to our website here and do this. But you'd want to protect and grow that through your property that you are going to be negotiating in less than 24 months, another deal they're going to try to go for 2X or 3X rights fees. You'd want to grow that there, not on this website here. And what this all does is it's all rationalizing. Like, at the end of the day, I think all three of us agree with this was a tournament that was thrown together. We've seen how they scheduled it with, like, the reliance on both Hikaru Shida and Amy Sakura to take care of half of it. Like, they pretty much were like, we need to get this taken care of. Can you all go and take care of these things? And this is just another instance of how much of a afterthought this tournament was, other than deciding, we haven't really built up anyone for Hikaru Shida, so we need to figure out someone else to do this. Let's do a tournament.
Yeah, so I agree with the majority of what you're saying. I'll 2 points to that. I do have to credit the promotion because they are pretty good about driving viewers' attention forward to the next thing that they're trying to promote. So a couple of those 80-yard segment we talked about was like Tony going, and don't remember, folks, we are on Sunday for Revolution. So they did mention that. And yeah, the thing about the tournament being thrown together, like I think for the people that the tournament is important to, they were all hands on deck. And like, I don't think it's any small task or undertaking to, you know, fly to Japan and coordinate and book a tournament and get a venue and get a camera crew and get talent and get crew and putting all this together, because it's important to you. But the people that are making the you know, decisions for what gets time on the television, it's just not as important to them. We've seen that the way the whole division has been handled. The idea that the Japanese matches needed to ever be on television was, you know, never reasonable. No fans matches in a small dojo with, not professional lighting and not professional cameras. Like, you can't put those on TNT. It'd be unreasonable to do that. But the idea that putting those matches in a little bug window on BleacherReport.com is somehow going to draw favorable eyeballs to your promotion, I don't know that that's true. The matches, I'm sure, are going to be great. But if you're a casual person clicking through and you're like, who are these random Japanese women having a poorly lit match in this dojo on my screen? That doesn't make sense to me as a strategy. If you're trying to argue that, oh no, they're actually putting it on Bleacher Report because they want it to draw eyeballs there. Doesn't wash with me, folks.
Oh, I agree. I think we've been clear on this show that the strategy with the Japanese matches made sense to all of us. But at the same time, they're putting Max Caster versus Preston Vance on TV next week. So it's like, now I appreciate that Max Caster has been a push commodity. And so it's like, okay, people might know who he is. But when you're comparing that to replacing that with Thunder Rosa versus Riho, which you could be putting on that television show, it, you know, just doesn't make a lot of sense.
Hey, you can fucking do both if every match isn't 25 minutes long.
That is also that's all.
And the matches will be better for it.
Yes, that's true. All right, the listener delete, something that we haven't mentioned. Chelsea calls out the first 20 minutes, and she makes this great point that relying on Moxley to rally enthusiasm is having diminishing returns. You know, having him come out and cut that white meat babyface promo, maybe there's just so many times you can do that with no crowd.
Yeah, that was as long as one of the matches, his promo. I've said before, I think we've probably said before, he's better in pre-tapes. He's done a handful of these in-ring promos and stuff that just don't hit the same way. I think that's true. You know, he keeps being like the voice of the company or whatever, and it's kind of like, okay, I've heard it.
And it like loses authenticity in a way with how much it's happening. Like when he won the title at Revolution last year, like when he cut the promo, like bleeding with the title, like cradling the title, saying, I love this shit. Like that felt real, because that probably was real for Jon Moxley. But like at a certain point, the authenticity that you have, that's not like his short, like down the barrel of the camera at the mysterious Jacksonville construction site promos, it is diminishing returns. And then you have that after a match with someone who really shouldn't be on TV or really in the company, to be quite honest. And it's kind of diminishing in some ways his star appeal in a way. Like, and he didn't say I love this shit. If he said I love this shit talking about the exploding death matches, I'd be like, yeah, no, because I know Jon Moxley does love this shit. Like that would have been a thing there. But yeah, no, I totally co-signed what Chelsea was saying there.
If you do want to hear more on his opponent, Hot Young Briley, we did This Is Hot Young Briley at the beginning of this week's women's tournament review show, myself and Aaron. So go check that on the Patreon.
Yes, we did. Amazingly, the one delete I put on the notes was Ryan Nemeth, and he did not get deleted by anybody.
I, like I said, we did cover it a lot on the Patreon.
Yes, we did.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com. repack.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy slab packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading, so you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio, and then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys, reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
So the show kicked off with Jon Moxley defeating the Hollywood hunk, hot young Ryan Nemeth, with a paradigm shift. And then the Mox promo, he did try to sell this exploding barbed wire death match, explain it a little bit and talk about why he was so worked up for it. So, I thought it was successful from that standpoint. But yeah, it was just like a lot of things, a little too long. We got our first of many videos recapping the Mox and Omega feud. And then we go back, first of many recap videos, not the first of many recapping that particular feud. Then we were backstage with Archer and Fenix. Is that true? Is that how this happened? I feel like that happened way later in the show now that I'm looking at this.
Time is right.
Yeah, that was early because this was also a segment that I was not very high on. I don't know. Fenix is like, I've heard him promo in English and he has a certain charm about, like doing his best job to speak English and convey his feelings. But he just kind of like quietly spoke Spanish here. And they were, I guess, trying to do a bit where Archer did not understand him. And it just didn't play to me.
Yeah, that was the thing. Basically, Fenix said, Archer's the worst partner he's ever had. And so that caused them to get mad at each other and brawl a little backstage. We saw the Young Bucks enter the arena with Mama and Papa Buck. Of course, that would become important later on. They pointed out, this nice truck with their pictures on it.
They did do this exact segment on BTE where they showed the Bucks their truck. I'm wondering if, is Tony seeing that on BTE and going, oh, I have an idea for what we can do. We can have Papa Buck bleed on that. I don't know. There's a curious tension between, it's like when they remake a series. What's a good example of this? It doesn't happen in Western television, so I'm not going to cite any specific examples.
Oh, I have one. The two versions of Legend of Galactic Heroes.
Yes. So I haven't seen that, but all my examples were from anime, so I'm sure that's correct. But yeah, they'll remake a series and have the exact same scene, but like one will be the BTE version that's like a little handheld camera version and Mama Buck with a weird energy. And then they'll just like do it all over again, but with a nice TNT camera for the television show. And it really just the continuity and the canon is all at odds here, because now we've seen them show their parents these trucks multiple times and Mama Buck is just thrilled with them.
Next up, Brian Cage and Ricky Starks defeated the Varsity Blondes. Brian Cage pinned Brian Pillman with the drill claw. And then, yeah, we got the big post-match angle with Darby and Sting that we talked about. Yeah, the match was probably too long, but I really love this tag team as like a mid-card. The Varsity Blondes is like a mid-card WCW C-show tag team. I just enjoy them a lot.
Absolutely. Would love to see them have this match on a C-show.
Yeah, or I agree with you. If they could have this match in 7 minutes or 5 minutes, that's a lot better. Basically, the key when you're doing a match like this that doesn't have any real big importance, you just get to the good stuff and then you go to the finish. It's like very simple. We don't need the buildup.
Yeah, they just have a fixation on, we're going to have a really good match here. Yeah, they did. They had, I think, a pretty good match. And I do like watching that young team develop and kind of get some chemistry going. I just think it's your A show, and I want to get to the meat of what the stars are doing.
Yeah, it's a B show match that they put on the A show. I think that's fair. Tony Schiavone is backstage interviewing Miro, Kip, and Penelope, which was hilariously in the Discord called Thruples Counseling. And they're mad that the wedding was ruined. Miro wants Charles to know that he would still welcome him back because Charles did some very good things for Miro while he was his butler. Someone hands Tony Schiavone a note from Orange Cassidy and Chuck asking Miro and Kip to wrestle them at Revolution. This makes Miro very mad. He stares down the barrel of the camera, says, "This is childish. This is why Charles needs to come back to him so he can teach him how to be an adult." He chews up the note and spits it at Toby, and which I legitimately cackled at.
Funniest thing that I think this show has done in a long time. Miro just like his first reaction was pick up the note. First, like, go with the XOXO, which was always like taunting him, thinking it was Cyrillic and saying, "Did I pronounce that right? Cyrillic?"
Cyrillic, yeah.
Yeah, hey, for once I pronounced something right on the show. Good for me. And saying that, of course, that it translates to ha-ha, and he's like, ho-ho, ho-ho, and he gets really angry, chews it up, and spits at the camera. Just like, how can't you love the thruple? Like, it was just a great segment, and Miro's a star, and he wants the best for Charles. Like, he is someone that we could all aspire to be. He's just trying to lift up his friends and, you know, his employees.
Yeah, whenever we get to the Miro segments, I'm always like, oh, you know, this could have been my elite. I did really enjoy this. For whatever reason, I am like very happy this angle is continuing. I just like the dynamic. I like that Miro just wants to be a mentor to Chuck. He knows Chuck is a fail son. He knows that Chuck is, you know, what Chuck is, what all of us are. And he's just like, no, Chuck, I'm going to teach you to be a man. I'm going to mentor you. You're going to have an alpha mindset after I'm done with you. It rings true. It feels real.
Yeah,
and Miro, he just has superstar energy. So, I'm still on board.
Yeah, the one thing that like does make me sad about this whole entire England feud, we never had a single package that was taped at Miro's mansion with like Miro trying to mentor him. Like, there's a lot of things they left on the table here. Like, can't you imagine how great that would have been? And then like this whole entire thing, like just because like how funny this is, and Miro is just. He's just tremendous in this promotion. And, you know, they left stuff on the table. Who among us would not want to watch him and Charles and Penelope and Kip? Like, that would have been great content that we missed out on. I'm very angry about that right now.
Have we all had a friend like this?
Oh, that wants to rise?
That wants to teach me how to be a man?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
I definitely did in college. Like, I had a buddy that I lifted weights with.
It's always someone who's like a mega weightlifting guy, isn't it?
Well, yeah, that's key element for sure.
Yeah, all we did was lift weights together and talk about baseball. That was it.
Yeah, no, you saying that did bring somebody to mind. Just like my freshman year, but still very fond of him. He left school in sophomore year because they discovered his father had a second family.
Oh, wow.
Oh, okay. Like, oh, that took a turn.
That's too much of an alpha mindset, I'm afraid.
Yeah. Yes. No, you hit the nail on the head there, AB. Like, he definitely is, like, the guy that you are friends with. And then, like, after a while, you're like, I don't know if I'm friends with you or you're just a very controlling person and wants to have everyone in their image, right? Like, that's – or what they perceive the image to be.
Okay, Mike, this is really something I need to talk more about at therapy more than on this podcast, I think.
I didn't mean to hit close to home.
This therapy? Fuck.
I am the last person to be anyone's counselor, just to be clear.
Yeah, I started lifting weights with this guy. I weighed 120 pounds, and I started lifting weights with this guy. And by the time we left college, I weighed 160 pounds. I drank a lot of creatine and protein shakes. And yeah.
So creatine not breaking edge?
No, absolutely not.
Okay.
No,
I mean, I don't know even the chemical makeup. I just know it's a big thing in the Major League Baseball, the creatine controversies.
I mean, creatine basically is just like makes you retain water. I mean, it's just like an easy way to gain weight. I needed to put on weight so that I could lift more, so that I could, you know, put on muscle.
Yeah.
Hard to do at 120 pounds.
Sure.
All right.
Got to get that Chonko.
You do.
Get on that Chonko diet.
You do. I would, yes, just like, oh God, the most disgusting protein shakes. And I would try to drink so many of them to try to gain weight. Disgusting. All right. Speaking of disgusting, Jake Hager defeated Brandon Cutler with a running clothesline. I don't know. I kind of thought this worked. It was fun and it was pretty short. So it was good.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Inner Circle attack Cutler. The Bucks made the save. They tried to call out Jericho and MJF. Jericho and MJF got on the screen and said, no, we're not coming out there, but we beat up Papa Buck. And that's where the sick Papa Buck angle happened. We did another recap slash hype video for Jade and Shaq versus Cody and Red Velvet. I really read this interview with Tony Khan, but I think he also suggested that Shaq is the one who brought Jade to their attention.
Really?
That's the way I read this interview. He said the day
I think that would be appropriate in kayfabe for that to be true, right?
Maybe, but she is Atlanta based.
Yeah.
She's married to a pro athlete, so that would also, you know, could make some sense.
We'd have to throw it to one of our, Instagram deep divers that'll go 6 years deep on these people. But certainly she was trained in wrestling. I just don't know was that QT Marshall school adjacent or not at all?
Don't know. The story Tony told was that the day that Fulham, won the game to go back to the Premier League or whatever the fuck. I don't know anything about soccer. but he said a ton of people were calling him, and even including famous people were calling him and congratulating him. And Shaq called him and he was like, "Oh, Shaq's calling to congratulate me." And Shaq was he had no fucking clue about this. It was like, "Hey man, I've been wanting to get into wrestling," it was funny.
That rips.
Yeah. Hangman Page defeated Isaiah Cassidy with a buckshot lariat. And this was definitely a match. It was good, but it definitely went on too long.
Yeah. I thought Isaiah Cassidy has been a surprisingly good heel in this role. And he showed, I think, a lot of that in this match. Yeah. Just the same time.
It was something with Cassidy that I felt like this was his best performance outside of matches he had with the Bucks so far in this promotion. I thought he was really good here, but he did need to tighten up.
After the match, we get Hardy's voice, the voice of God saying Paige chose the Dark Order over him. So he's going to hurt every member of the Dark Order. And then he threw Allen Angels through a table.
It's like when they get an idea for a spot, they're like, "Oh, let's do that spot again." So they just did that, table bump with Kenta. They're like, "Oh, we can do the table throw with Allen Angels."
So is now Matt Hardy in the ward throw?
Absolutely.
You're the commissioner, I think. So you tell us.
Well, Patrick Cosmos is the commissioner. I'm just helping set up parameters. That's
right. My apologies to Patrick.
Yes. How Allen Angels has fallen during COVID. I mean, this guy went from going toe-to-toe 50-50 with Kenny Omega to fucking Matt Hardy throwing him through a table.
You know why? It's because he fell into that role of being the, kicking boy of the Dark Order on the vlogs. Once you get into that, spot, you're kind of stuck there.
The vlogs are real to Tony, I think.
I think the vlogs are real to everybody.
At least BTE. All right. Alex Marvez goes into a workshop and we see Kenny Omega with just an amazingly cut shirt that he's wearing. And he's there. Don Callis is there. Some other guys. And they're making things. And Don Callis tells them they're working on the Moxley extermination chamber. So we're to believe they are building the cage for the death match.
I really would have liked for this angle. Remember when John Moxley had that bad match with Brock Lesnar and for weeks leading up to it, he went and got a weapon from Terry Funk and from Mick Foley and shit. Yeah. They should have done that with this angle, but it's Kenny and Don Callis going to DJ's backyard to get him to, it's DJ Hyatt, I want you to build me one wall of the cage of death for our exploding landmine match.
Invite needs to show up and hand him light tubes,
Yeah. Go to all these death match legends and get him to contribute some classic CZW in ring construction.
See what Corporal Robinson has. Maybe. I mean, there's a lot of ways to kick off this. I just like the fact that since his teal turn, we're getting some really great cocaine energy out of Kenny Omega. And it was this was the perfect encapsulation of it. They found a way to kind of keep him on TV and him just doing things that are just insane. This is a guy who was speaking to kids last week and he might have lost the title. It's just insane. And I like to believe that Don Callis is big into Forge and Fire. He seems like someone who would be a knife guy as a knife guy. So I appreciate that.
They got to figure out a way to have Onita at this match. They just have to figure it out.
Not going to happen. Even if they booked him and flew him over, he'd stand him up at the 59th minute.
That'd be sick.
He'd want to be put in the match, and he'd want to go over.
they should put him over. Make him be a champion.
Atsushi Onita is going to come to AEW, and he'll be the AEW champion. He's only going to drop it to, like, Shadow WX. Like, I'm just trying to think of one of his...
No, he will agree to drop the title to Paul White.
Yes.
He's the world's largest athlete, man.
Yes, yes, yes. And they could go find Dragon Kid and have him do the exploding death match and actually be under the hood this time.
It's going to rule. Next up, we had, a new place for the women's tournament, a semifinal match. Nyla Rose defeated Britt Baker with the Beast Bomb. Big upset here, I thought. I think we all kind of anticipated Britt would win the whole damn thing, and she did not.
Yeah. I feel like this was a good time to elevate Britt to that level. She's been, you know, one of the highlights of the television whenever she's on. We've seen Sheeta and Rose, maybe too much, because their last match together wasn't great. And that was a thrown together rematch from their previous match. We've seen Sheeta and Rosa, and maybe the one other big match, big feud that they built with Sheeta was Sheeta and Riho. So really felt like Britt was going to be the one coming out of here. So I guess now the logical conclusion is whoever's coming out of the Japanese side of the bracket is going to win the tournament altogether. I guess so they can hang around in the States an extra, you know, week or whatever it is, and then wrestle Sheeta on the pay-per-view.
I've been wrong about everything about this tournament so far, but I'm just going to keep going. And I just can only assume now that the point of this is to put Riho over and to put the belt back on Riho.
Well, she did move to Jacksonville for this.
Yeah.
And there is no delicious pasta like Fukuoka. So you've got to entice Riho, is what I'm saying. But like, yeah, it makes you wonder if, like, Britt Baker, because they've done all this building and all this rehab, and she's really improved in all facets of being a wrestler, to the promos, to her
really,
matches.
Really good match here. Probably my favorite match on the show.
Yeah. So it's something where you start to wonder, like, she's someone that they clearly seem like that they always have had plans for. And you're just wondering, like, is it going to come now? Cause this would have been like the perfect time, because her and Sheeta had this feud, and Sheeta's really run through the entire division as much as possible. So is the last boss really Riho for Hikaru Sheeta here? Like, that's the question that like I'm asking myself now, because it seemed like this was like the clear path. I felt like it's okay, now we get Britt's like big reign coming out of this, and I guess that's not the case.
Yeah, I got shouted down by our good friend Doros for saying that, you know, like, are they ever gonna go with Britt if they won't go with her now? And
he is known to shout. He does, yeah. When Thoros comes at you, yeah, he'll run you down, all caps, for sure.
For sure. You know, and Thoros said, look, it's good to have a woman who can have another feud, you know, that's not for the title, which is true. Obviously, if Riho beats Rosa, that opens up Rosa for continuing her feud with Britt Baker. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. You did this Riho-Serena Deeb thing. I thought you could do a rematch for the NWA title with that. The Britt Sheeta story makes 100% sense. Britt and Yuka Sakazaki made 100% sense, which clearly they're not doing. So it's just like, I don't understand the booking of this tournament really in any way.
Yeah, it kind of feels like it's going to be Sheeta versus Ryu Mizunami. And that does not feel very hot to me. Meltzer did go out of his way to say, oh, you don't have to quarantine at all coming from Japan, so Yuka Sakazaki would actually be entirely able to fly in and do the final and shit on one day's notice after whatever her last Japanese booking is. So
it's the same day.
Well, it's the same day, but they're ahead of us, right?
Is this that like 12 versus 12 show that's supposed to be happening? Is that taped? I thought like the previous one was taped.
I don't think so because Maki Ito can't make it because of another thing, so they had to change it to an 11 versus 11 match.
maybe they hiddenly took Yuka Sakazaki out of it. Who knows?
Yeah, I'm just not gonna. Basically, I was bringing that up to say I'm not certain about anything, but
yeah,
this was not going the way that I anticipated,
or really any of us.
No, they did another recap/hype video with the FTR Jurassic Express feud. Mike, you pointed this out in the Discord, but yeah, it felt like they just ran completely under what they intended with like timing. And it was like, we got to put some fucking videos together, folks.
Right. Yeah, like that's what I was trying to say in my elite, like my delete. This felt like something where like the whole entire episode so it was just kind of thrown together in a way, because that's how this promo felt, right? Like it felt like building this up, getting the clips of Tully, and I didn't get a chance to really watch this segment because I was setting us up for the live stream, but did they even get Tully to cut any sort of promo towards this whatsoever?
No, it's a Marco Stunt promo.
What's the purpose of that when you're not like Tully's having his first match since the 80s or like 92 or something?
Yeah, that
or,
seems or, like a cool thing to build.
To build up or Heroes of Wrestling, just so no one like adds me the known like worst pay-per-view of all time, Heroes of Wrestling.
I don't mind the idea of a video package in general. It can even be like pretty helpful to be like, hey, here's a reminder of everything that Kenny Omega and John Moxley have done together. They've been linked since the beginning of this promotion. Like that can be pretty useful. And they've done really good music videos in this promotion. What I'll say about this is you guys were critical. I think it was you guys were critical of Jungle Boy on the mic, I think. And he was speaking here. And then when Marco Stunt interrupted him to be like, oh no, I'm going to bring the fire now. I was like, oh wow. Marco Stunt just kind of outshone Jungle Boy in this segment. And that's maybe not ideal.
There's some wild Tully Blanchard matches on Cage Match.
Oh yeah.
2006, Dory Funk Jr. and Mike Graham versus David Flair and Tully Blanchard.
2006.
Yeah.
What was
Dory
this?
Funk is who I was thinking of when Mike was talking about watching old guys wrestle and being concerned for their health most of the time.
Yes, yeah. Yes. I was talking straight up about tradition right there.
Yeah, there's some wild matches on here. So
what was this 2006 match?
Cage match?
Buddy, he's done quite a few matches. Since from 2005 through 2007, he did quite a few matches. Damn. But that match was at the fucking Hard Rock Cafe in Orlando, Florida. World Wrestling Legends.
Oh, we've talked about that Hard Rock Cafe previously on this show.
It's established canon.
I've probably been there.
I've definitely been there.
Yeah.
All right.
Stay tuned to the Patreon for more Hard Rock Cafe adventures. I think that's where Anna Nicole Smith died.
Oh yeah, we have talked about
she died at the Hard Rock Casino and Hotel in Hollywood, Florida, which I have been many times.
Okay,
many times. I do not know if I stayed in the room that Anna Nicole Smith died in, though. I don't want to know.
SB asked me the other day if when we're both vaccinated, can we go to Disney? And I'm like, fuck, I don't know, man. That's still seems terrifying. Even if I were vaccinated, it still seems terrifying.
That's very funny. First priority.
Oh yeah, that's like the first thing that she's thinking of is going to Disney.
Well, I mean, the first thing I'm gonna do is lick a floor. I'm gonna lick some floor. Like I will just do that because I'll be all powerful.
I see a floor right here. You can lick it.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, there's nothing preventing you from licking a floor right now. You're not gonna get the COVID.
But not in my house. Like I'm talking about like going to a bar, going
very public floor.
Also,
yes, exactly.
I'm pretty sure we've decided it's like airborne now, and the whole sanitizing surfaces thing is a waste of time. So,
yeah, I gave that up.
Yeah, lick the air. You lick the air of a populous area.
Yeah, like and that's
make out with another human being. That's really the most dangerous thing you can do.
The most dangerous game.
The most dangerous game is tongue kissing.
Yeah, it's true. Lance Archer defeated Ray Fenix with the blackout in the main event, which we talked about. And that was the end of the show. They fist bumped to close out the show. All right, now, if you've just been bowled over by our hilarious digressions and, you know, my hot women's tournament take, and you're just like, fuck, I got to hear more of this, head over to patreon.com/everythingelite. It's been a wild month. Over at the Everything Elite Patreon. I got to be honest with you.
We've done too many shows in general this month. We've definitely done way too many shows for the shortest month of the year.
Well, yes. Well, to be fair, one of these shows each week is me 15 minutes recapping the Go Big show. Like, that's not a real show. Like, that's just me talking
about
the
show, Mike.
If it's a download, it's a show, Mike.
Okay. I'm just saying, like, I'll talk about my main man Tolga anyways. Like, y'all did see in the promotion that they did for Go Big Show that he was spinning around his flaming caber, right? Like, Tolga's the man.
Oh, I saw it. Yeah, we've done a lot of stuff this month. I've started to think if maybe the real magic is doing more of these like short shows than it is like we try to do one big long show every week. I think people just like the more content. I don't know. We'll have to think about that. Anyway, this week, Monday, Mike's Tea Break. Mike, you talked about partnerships.
Yeah.
And not like LLCs.
No, not about LLCs or S-Corps or anything like that. Earlier this month, talking about doing too many shows, I sat down and I just kind of had a cup of tea. And it was kind of inspired a little bit by Matt Cushman's vlogs that he does, where he just kind of just opines while he's grilling steaks. I don't know if he still grills steaks in this, but what I did this week was, as then called the tea break, where I talk about partnerships, what we should expect out of partnerships, a history of international wrestling and partnerships thereof, and, you know, just kind of I'm kind of putting together my own theory of wrestling slowly by each of these shows, and this was one part of it. I talked about Ricky Dozen for a good 10 minutes.
I ordered some ceremonial matcha tea so I could make some of that real green shit.
Are you going to have like the nice brush that they use to mix it together?
Oh, I don't have a brush. So no.
And I know it's not called a brush, but you know what I'm talking about. It's how they stir and make matcha. Yeah.
I just watching too many anime with fucking delicious looking green tea glasses. And it's like, oh, I got to get that. Just the pure green matcha. That's
pure,
my tea talk.
All right. Pure tea talk, green folks. Matcha.
Unfucking cut matcha.
Late Monday night.
Black tar matcha.
Nate and I came back with a review of the women's tournament show that was on YouTube that night. We also talked Hot Young Briley. We talked something else too. I can't remember now.
We talked Landstorm on Blocked Party.
Oh yeah, that's right. We did talk about that.
Something else too. We didn't get to the women's tournament until like the 25 minute mark.
No.
So apologies to all the matches I called too long today.
We did Light this week, of course, where Mike and I recap Dark, preview Dynamite, and Nate breaks down all the vlog content. And of course, Friday, Mike did the Go Big Show. Next week we'll have it'll be the first week of March, I believe. I believe Monday is the first day of March. So
it is all day long.
Sign up. We're going to have a Revolution retrospective. We'll look back at the 2020 Revolution. I just looked to see what the women's title match was, and it was Nyla Rose versus Chris Statlander.
Yeah.
Hey, do back anytime, maybe.
Yeah, and that was the time.
Wait, hold on, Mike. That's Patreon content. Remember, the match is Patreon content. You can't give it away here.
Yep. Sorry. Yeah, no.
Oh, that's right. We have to remember the matches later.
That's all we do is we go, hey, remember some guys? And then we talk about whatever was on the card.
remember some matches?
But then we do our previews for the show on the retrospective as well.
That's true. So. We'll also do our preview for 2021 Revolution. We'll do Light. I'll definitely be talking about the fucking Sunday night women's tournament thing and the Monday night women's tournament thing. So I'll be talking about that. I think Kara is going to join me for one of those. Nate, of course, if you want to sign back up for more content, we'll do that. We got plenty of stuff coming up. I've got a special guest for a new episode of Mixtape Club coming in March. You're going to want to sign up in March. We'll have the instant reaction for a Revolution. That'll be live. God, Sunday night. Okay, so also, patreon.com/everythingelite. Go sign up. 3 tiers. $8 tier gets you the live EE every week. $5 tier gets you everything else. So, Tony Khan also said, it's okay to do this on Sunday because Monday's a holiday, and so everybody will be off work. You're not rushing to get to work. What fucking holiday is it, Tony?
For sure, it's not a holiday.
Okay, it's International Women's Day, which...
It is a holiday. I didn't say it's not a holiday.
We do not get off work, though,
is not a federal bank holiday.
No, so I'm not sure of Tony's deal. He did say they'll be going back to Saturdays because they don't want to compete with the NFL, of course. But yeah, so I didn't understand that. But anyway, February 28th.
What does he think it is?
I don't know.
It is Alexander Graham Bell's Day. It is also Finisher's Medal Day, Namesake Day, and Daughter and Sons Day. I just Googled.
This is a son's, a father and son's promotion, but doesn't mean we get the day off. So
also it is also maybe Eastern Orthodox has liturgics as well. There is a lot of Christian feasts as well as Teacher's Day in Albania.
Oh well,
maybe he saw that it's Labor Day in Australia and he's like, oh, Labor Day.
I think he thinks it's Memorial Day, but it's not.
No,
it's just not.
Heroes Day in Paraguay. Shout out to our Paraguay listeners.
Yes, our Paraguayan heroes. Shout out to them. Okay, Sunday night, women's tournament, Japanese final. We get Aja Kong versus Yuka Sakazaki. U.S. semifinal, Thunder Rosa versus Riho. And then we get the six-woman tag that I, again, don't have the matchup for.
It is Hikaru Shida, Mei Tsuruga, Ren Kakakura, Emi Sakura, Maki Ito, and Vinny. Is Aja
Vinny.
Kong on
Vinny?
Vinny, no, Vinny, because Aja Kong, they paid for her to take a count out. She's not doing anything else. So yeah, there we go. Look at me being the Joshi person. Listen to my new Joshi show.
I just said it was Aja Kong versus Yuka, and none of you corrected me. It's Leo Mizunami. It's Leo Mizunami versus Yuka Sakazaki, of course. Then on Monday, 3-1. We'll get Nyla versus the winner of Riho and Thunder Rosa. Then next week on Dynamite, the Crossroads. See you at the Crossroads. We've got, the big match. Cody and Red Velvet versus Shaq and Jade Cargill. That's happening next week on Dynamite, folks.
Do we think they should have waited to have Paul White be a surprise? This was a topic. I think Jade Cargill wins that match. That's my guess. And then you could have, Paul White come in and chokeslam Cody, because that's how you debut in this promotion, is by attacking Cody.
Right. Yeah. Naturally.
I mean, people would freak out.
Mm-hmm.
If they'd done it as a surprise instead.
Yeah.
Or announce him as like the special referee, and then partway through he turns on Cody and attacks him. Step one is you have to attack Cody Rhodes. Like, that's step one if you are coming to this promotion and he's already fucking up.
Yeah, probably would have done it as a surprise, because, you could say, well, they announced it hoping to like goose the ratings tonight, but then he didn't show, like, he wasn't there. So like, what was the point of that?
They wasn't there, and they teased news, but the news was not news at all. So they got it out in the first 20 seconds of the show.
Yeah.
It did seem like more of a, brand equity thing than a pro wrestling kind of thing, where they're like, oh no, AEW is the place to be. We signed this, crossover wrestling star that people outside of wrestling will have heard of. So that's probably why they announced it rather than have it be an angle.
We should do a test here, or at least I'm going to do a test here. I'm going to check to see if Mama Spears knows who the Big Show is.
I think she will. I don't think all my right. parents would.
So Nate thinks that Mama Spears knows who the Big Show is. Yes. AB, you sound like you are pretty positive about that as well.
I think she does, yeah.
All right, so I'll report back to see crossover appeal.
Mama Spears loves vaping. The Big Show loves vaping.
Not love vaping, not at all.
Mama Spears loves Destiny 2, the game.
Mama Spears loves big guys in diapers and sashes.
Celebrating that they are the New Year's baby, a joke that was only really funny on The Critic.
Yeah, very good. FTR and Tully Blanchard versus Jurassic Express. The women's title eliminator final, which will be Nyla or Riho or Rosa versus Yuka Sakazaki or Leo Mizunami. The Dark Order versus Matt Hardy.
Private Party. Yes.
NTH2.
The sequel has just kicked in for AB.
No, I haven't taken it yet. So that's the real problem. And in the ladder match qualifier, 10 versus Max Caster. Yeah, it's like too much shit. It's like, okay, the Cody and Red Velvet Shaq J. Cargo match should get plenty of time, right? Like,
I mean, that's
a
scary
spectacle, but it should get time.
It's a spectacle, but I don't know if that's a spectacle that you're going to be asking a lot of Jade Cargill to do that.
Yeah, I hope it doesn't get very much time, to be honest. I hope, because the longer it goes, the more opportunity for disaster.
Right.
Yeah, but Cody's going to have shortcut ideas. They're going to do a bunch of
overbooking.
Dumb things. Yeah.
Do you think that we're going to see the what was Big Show's punch? The WMD, the weapon of mass destruction out of Shaq.
That was so fucking bad. I hated that so much. Just do a choke slam, man, like every other big guy. Okay, that's the show. That'll be the show next week, rather. And then, of course, Revolution. Make sure you listen to that. You go join the Patreon, listen to our Revolution preview. That's where it'll be. And then March 15th, AW Dark Elevation premieres.
Elevation.
That's right.
Elevation. It's 11:30.
Trace.
Yeah. Like,
remember that?
Yeah. Oh no. Of course I remember that.
How could we not remember it? It was on all of our iPods.
Yeah. Like, wasn't there like a lawsuit against Apple and U2 about putting on that album on people's iPods without like their authorization or consent?
Yeah. Yeah. It was a thing.
God, the 2000s were weird.
I saw this Apple ad the other day that was like, the whole point of the ad was nobody should get to see your shit. Like, your shit is private.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the niche that Apple is carving out is, no, we actually care about your privacy, which is, I think, good.
But they sell our shit. That's insane.
No, they have considerably better privacy controls than the other tech giants, you know, namely Facebook, Google, Microsoft.
Okay, but they definitely have an agreement with whatever arm of the federal government where they will give your shit up.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Well, they did. No, for a time, I know they would refuse to unlock phones for the FBI and shit.
Yeah.
I think the FBI developed their own tool. But yeah, no, I'm not speaking about, federal subpoenas or whatever. I'm talking about the ability to control what of your information they sell off to advertisers.
Well, I don't believe it is what I'm saying.
That's fine. I'm not gonna. I'm sure you're right.
I just assume if I use a device that I might as well be doing it all publicly.
That assumption works against your right to privacy, by the way.
I know.
So you should not make that assumption. You should presume that you have a right to privacy. And then you're more likely to be found to have one.
Oh, I still do plenty of shit that, you know, if everybody found out about it, it'd be disastrous.
Yeah, don't go down this road.
Yeah, let's cut this off here, Bob.
Okay, sounds good. You guys got anything else?
No.
Of course I do, but I think we have gone long enough, and we don't need more of my existential breakdowns on air.
I'll post my weird shit over at Everything AEW on Twitter or at Aaron Like the Car. Nate will continue to post his at Epitasis. And Mike will post his weird shit at Fuji Heya.
All my shit is normal.
Not your tents, huh?
you got me. Weird tents.
Subscribe to the podcast. Give us a 5-star rating. Give us a review. But most importantly, head over to patreon.com/everythingelite and put in your damn credit card number. They're not going to tell us what it is. We won't know. Only Patreon will know.
And if we get to 100, then I'll drive to Louisville, Kentucky and get punched in the neck and cut for our patrons.
All right. I'm fine. That sounds good.
Well, because of the Bentley bet agreement, which is that while the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame ballot is out, I'm not allowed to comment on it. I broke it because K-Slow tricked me.
Is this something that AAW Light listeners would know what's happening right now?
No, this is established canon. Okay. Like, this is what, the third year of the bet at this point?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, frankly, Mike, I would love to have company, so. That sounds great. All right. Signing off for Mike, for Nate. I'm Aaron. We'll see you next time.